everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me. As always, thank you all so much for the support on the podcast so far.
Please follow, share with your friends and write us a review, but only if it's a good one.
Today we are drinking coffee and eating a lovely cake from a place called Fika, which is on Walton Road in Allerton.
That was a really nice cake and the coffee is brilliant too.
It was a millionaire shortbread.
Didn't last long, did it?
No.
Didn't last a million seconds.
How long is a million seconds?
Oh, for God's sake.
So I actually just Googled it and it says 1 million seconds would take up 11 days, 13 hours, 46 minutes and 40 seconds.
I would have guessed about 3.5 hours. This is why I was in the bottom set for maths in school.
This week, we are talking about a story that takes place in 2018. Here are a few interesting facts about that year.
The treadmill celebrated its 200-year anniversary. Originally, it was designed as a torture device.
Did you know that?
No, but it still is, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
I used to hang the washing on mine. I never
People's
went on
fat
it.
Fat literally cries on the treadmill.
The Sahara Desert was blanketed in snow, which was a rare sight for one of the hottest places in the world, where the average temperature is 86 degrees Fahrenheit. This one's got to be a wind-up, but I'm going to tell you it anyway. 12 camels found to have Botox in their lips were disqualified from a camel beauty contest. Was that in Liverpool?
That can't be real, can it? A camel beauty contest?
Well, if it's in one of the found facts, I guess it is, but that could only take place in sort of the Liverpool area, couldn't it? Did that camel have Scouse brows as well?
And rollers in.
Pajamas on going to Asda. Sorry, the Asda. Yeah. The Asda.
Right, everyone, let's get on with this week's case. Before we dive in, please note that this episode contains graphic details involving domestic violence, child harm, and family trauma. Listener discretion is advised. This is the case of the Watts family tragedy. In 2018, Chris Watts horrified not only the nation but the entire world when he confessed to murdering his pregnant wife Shanann and their two young daughters Bella and Celeste in Colorado. Initially pleading for their safe return, Chris's story quickly unraveled, revealing hidden motives behind the brutal killings. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. To understand the full weight of this story, let's begin by looking at the lives of Chris and Shanann Watts. Christopher Lee Watts was born on 16th of May 1985 in Spring Lake, North Carolina, a quiet kid with a love for cars and NASCAR. He was described as reserved and soft-spoken, the kind of person who would blend into the background. Shanann Catherine Rusek, on the other hand, was outgoing, driven, and strong-willed. She was born on 10th of January 1984 and was originally from Aberdeen, North Carolina. Shanann had overcome significant health challenges, including a diagnosis of lupus and other autoimmune diseases, yet she thrived in her career and personal life. Shanann worked from home as a saleswoman for health and wellness company Lavelle, selling products for their Thrive brand, while Chris worked as an operator at Anadarko Petroleum. In 2010, Chris and Shanann met online on Facebook. Shanann was initially hesitant, but Chris was patient and kind, and before long, they became inseparable. They married in 2012 and eventually moved to the small town of Frederick, Colorado, where they started a family. Bella Marie Watts was born on 17th of December 2013, and soon after, Celeste Catherine Watts, who they called Cece, was born on the 17th of July 2015. Social media became an integral part of Shanann's life. Her Facebook posts often showcased a life filled with joy and love, from family outings to heartfelt notes about her husband and children. Through these posts, she projected an image of a close-knit, loving family with an inspiring marriage. From the outside, they seemed like a happy, supportive couple, but behind closed doors, financial stress and other issues were starting to chip away at their marriage. Chris and Shanann had declared bankruptcy in 2015, and while Chris maintained steady employment, their lifestyle often exceeded their income.
It's often the case, isn't it? You know, when people... Well, really, I suppose, because she had to maintain this image that was on Facebook, really. And once you start doing that, there's no going back, is there? You've got to keep up that level of, you know, presentation is what I was trying to say.
So do you think she was posting on Facebook as like a cover to make it seem like they were a happy family when in reality they weren't? Or do you think she was genuinely just posting happy stuff on her Facebook?
I think it was probably a mixture of both. I think the job that she had depended on a certain level of image. And once she'd started doing that, she had to maintain that. She was selling this product, which was, like you say, a wellness kind of product. It was, I think, some kind of, you know, like powders and things that you mixed into drinks and things, you know, for vitality and all this business. And she wanted to present the perfect family, which obviously it wasn't. It came out in the end, but from the outside looking in, it seemed to be that way. And it was a image that other people wanted to aspire to as well.
Yeah, when you look at, well, I mean, even when you Google this case, all that comes up is just pictures of them with their kids, and I'm assuming they were all the pictures that she put on Facebook.
Yeah, well, that's what she was using to sell the product, really. So that was actually part of her job as well.
By the summer of 2018, Shanann had become pregnant with their third child, a son they planned to name Nico. She hoped that adding to their family might reignite the spark in her marriage. To everyone around them, the Watts family seemed like they were moving forward, excited for the future. But what was happening beneath the surface would soon lead to unimaginable tragedy. Despite Shanann's best efforts to keep the family struggles hidden, her friends noticed that something was off. Chris had grown distant. He no longer displayed the quiet affection that had once defined their relationship. But instead of celebrating their pregnancy, Chris's behaviour grew more erratic. He began to withdraw even more from Shanann and the girls, avoiding family gatherings and becoming increasingly cold and unresponsive. By June, Chris was engaged in a full-blown affair with a co-worker, Nicole Kessinger. She later admitted to police that she had been dating Chris since June 2018, under the impression that he and Shanann were separated and that Chris had described his marriage as loveless and on the brink of divorce. He portrayed himself as a man trapped, waiting to be free. To keep the affair hidden, he started lying to Shanann about his whereabouts, staying out late, and concocting elaborate stories. Well, that's a motive right there, isn't it?
It seemed like they were just going along quite happily until this other woman came on.
Until they weren't. And I think it describes him anyway as quite reserved, quite quiet, almost shy. And I read in a couple of different articles, it said he was non-confrontational, he didn't like arguments, stuff like that. It seemed like he was quite chilled, like quite chilled out.
Yeah, it comes across that way when you see him in videos. And I think Shanann was the opposite to him, which very often works, doesn't it? You know, each partner, one's quiet, one's the complete opposite, and that's what attracts. I think Shanann brought out the best in Chris, and he balanced her out because she was quite outgoing, and as you say, he was quite reserved. And when they met, from photographs and things, you know, he wasn't exactly in shape, and then he started, you know, she kind of got him on that pathway, really, and made him sort of, gave him more of an image, is what I'm trying to say, and fitted in quite well with what she was doing.
Or was he just getting in shape for this woman on the side?
I think he was already doing that, but I think this probably took it to another level.
I think probably from the outside as well, if you didn't know him very well, you probably wouldn't have been able to sense a difference. You know, if you were just friends of Chris and Shanann, you probably wouldn't notice the drastic change in his behaviour, because you're probably just seeing him as quite reserved and shy anyway. And if he was retreating a little bit more, it probably wouldn't be that different to what he is naturally anyway.
No, not from the outside, but Shanann would have noticed that. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? There's two personalities here, and one is more dominant than the other, and that dominant personality was Shanann. From what I've read about the case, it almost became that Chris was emasculated, where he lost all kinds of control, and, you know, all the decisions were made for him. It was always what Shanann wanted. Whether that's exactly true, I don't know. But you can see, even in the videos, you know, they look like a really loving family, but you could see that there was a more dominant personality.
I think it comes across to me like she was just trying to make the marriage work, and obviously he's got to a point where he no longer wants to even try and make it work.
Yeah, she bought self-help books and things, you know, on how to save marriage and stuff. She was trying to do that. And you've got to think, haven't you, when he met her, she was like that then. So it was acceptable then. That obviously attracted him, the way she was. But then it became unreasonable for some other reason. I'm guessing that reason was this other woman.
Well, you hear about this all the time, don't you? A man gets interested in another woman, and all of a sudden, whatever he's got, he doesn't want it anymore. Whether that's kids, a family, a wife, it's just like they want to start afresh, and that's what it seems like with Chris.
Yeah, I mean, to start another relationship, he had a lot of baggage, didn't he? Young children and an impending birth of another child as well.
And I was going to say, this Nicole that he's having an affair with, obviously she's under the impression that he's no longer with Shanann, because he's told her that they've broke up. So I don't think you can put much blame on her, really.
Or was she, though? Because from what I've read as well, she went into Facebook and different things. Although she denied that she knew about him being married, you would only have to look at Facebook to see. I mean, you know, Shanann was pregnant as well. That shows some kind of level of intimacy, doesn't it? So, you know, you'd have to be a bit soft, really, not to see that they weren't still together. What stories Chris told her, I don't know, but they definitely were still together, you could see that.
Well, we'll find out that he's a compulsive liar, so who knows what he told her?
Well, Nicole was actually looking up wedding dresses and things, you know, so, I mean, from Chris's point of view, to go forward, he needed to have a fresh start, didn't he?
Our story starts to take a dark turn on August the 13th, 2018. Shanann had just returned from a business trip to Arizona with her friend, Nicole Atkinson. That night, she'd texted Chris from the airport, sharing her excitement about Nico and expressing hope for their future. Nicole dropped Shanann off at her home in Frederick around 2 a.m. It would be the last time Shanann was seen alive. The next morning, when Nicole tried to reach Shanann, she received no reply. Shanann missed a doctor's appointment and hadn't posted on social media, which was unusual for her. I think this doctor's appointment was something to do with the pregnancy, because I read somewhere that it was deemed as a high-risk pregnancy, so she had to go for regular checkups at the doctor's, so for her to miss that was a massive red flag for her friend.
Yeah, I think on that business trip as well that she'd just been on, she was telling her friends, you know, how upset she was because she was texting Chris and he wasn't really responding properly, and she didn't eat or drink properly while she was on the trip, so they were already concerned. And then for Shanann to miss a doctor's appointment was just totally out of character, because she was a really good mother.
Well, it also says that she hadn't posted anything on social media, and obviously, as we've learned, social media played a big part in her life. So if you're active on social media every single day and then all of a sudden you don't start posting and people aren't seeing stuff, it might, you know, it might raise a few questions.
Well, Facebook was her job, wasn't it? Social media was part of her job, so it was like not going into work as well.
Concerned, Nicole went to Shanann's house around noon, hoping to check in on her. Chris was at work, but he told Nicole that Shanann had taken the girls for a play date. However, when Nicole found Shanann's car still in the garage, she became increasingly alarmed and called the police. Officers soon arrived to perform a welfare check. Officer Coonrod arrived at the Watts residence around 1:40 p.m. on August the 13th.
The problem was they wouldn't let anybody into the house because they weren't the homeowner. So they then had to phone Chris at work. Somebody phoned him at work, and then he came with the keys to open up the house.
Chris arrived shortly after, seemingly surprised and offering to help. Together they searched the house and found Shanann's purse and keys were still there. But there was no sign of Shanann or the girls. Her phone was later located between the couch cushions in the family home, and a car, which still contained the girls' car seats, was in the garage. Shanann's wedding ring was found on the bedside table during the search, and at that moment, something was deeply wrong.
The fact that a car was there, because they live in Colorado, it looked like some kind of satellite town that had been built. So it was in the middle of mountains and everything, wasn't it? And you can't go anywhere without your car, so she clearly had not gone. You know, the car was there. Where would she have taken the girls without the car?
Well, and also just going back to, like, her being active on social media and stuff, she's not going to go anywhere without a phone, is she?
No, and now she's missed her doctor's appointment, which is the most telling thing. She's not been on social media. The car's still there. And also, you know, a purse, which is a bag, isn't it? You know, your bag with your stuff in. That was still there.
And her keys, and her phone.
And her keys, and her medication was there as well, and she needed to take that. So she's not going to go off, you know, on any trip of any kind, is she, without that with her?
So the wedding ring on the table is quite telling to me, because to anyone else, it might just look like she's had enough. She's left a wedding ring, and she's packed up, and she's left.
Well, that's what it's been made to look like, isn't it? You know, that's a significant sort of signed to somebody else to say, well, the marriage is over and off ago.
Exactly. So it's been put there on purpose.
On purpose, yeah.
Chris seemed nervous, yet willing to cooperate, until he wasn't. Detectives quickly started looking into Chris's statements, which raised suspicions. Chris claimed he'd had a civil conversation with Shanann early in the morning on August 13th, during which she told him she wanted to separate. He alleged that she'd taken the kids to a friend's house after that, but this story didn't add up, especially since Shanann's personal belongings, including her phone and medication, were still at home. As part of standard procedure, the police began searching the Watts home for any clues to Shanann's whereabouts. Detectives noticed Chris's unusual behaviour and how he would often avoid eye contact or appear detached. One of the body cam recordings captured Chris pacing and appearing nervous as detectives asked him questions. I've actually seen that body cam footage from when he's at home, and I believe it is the initial officer that arrived that had the body cam on, and you can see that he looks a bit shifty.
So they actually went into the next door neighbour's house, who had a home security CCTV set up, and the officer watched what was on that at the time, and Chris, you could see, was pacing up and down, really nervous with his hands on his head, and you can just tell he was dreading seeing it, you know, watching it in case anything came up on it.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, the way he's answering the questions to the police, like, he's thinking about his answers before he says it.
Usually people go, if the police ask a question, they repeat the question back, don't they, to kind of give them more time to think about it. That's a telltale sign.
Chris gave interviews to Denver TV stations KMGH-TV and KUSA-TV outside the house, pleading for the return of his wife and daughters. I think that's probably one of the most sick parts to me about this whole thing, is that he actually went on live TV, and I watched it yesterday before I was researching this case, and he's saying, like, I just have no idea where they could be, I'm worried sick, like, I'm terrified.
Yeah, he keeps saying, doesn't he, if someone has them, I just want them back. And to think, I think it's quite chilling, really, when you watch that it was only a matter of hours before that he'd actually disposed of the bodies.
I don't know how someone can be, because he's quite composed, I think, in these interviews, especially with police and with the big TV cameras in his face. He looks quite composed.
He actually does, except if you're a psychologist or, you know, behavioural expert, you can tell he's got his arms crossed across his front. You know, all those telltale signs,
yeah,
they say to look for.
Yeah, flicking his eyes away and back,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, like defensive sort of posture and things, which on the surface you wouldn't really notice, but when you look at it, you can see that he doesn't want to give too much away. He said that he had an emotional conversation, is what he said.
Yeah, an emotional conversation which he said led to them agreeing to separate or whatever it was.
Which was far from the truth.
It's quite scary to me how someone can, as we'll learn, do something so tragic to their family and just stand there and give these interviews and stuff and just not. It's obviously like he doesn't care.
Well, that's self-preservation, isn't it? That's what he's doing. Doesn't want to get caught, does he?
I wonder if he actually thought he could get away with it.
Well, I think he probably did, but how you would think you could get away with this is just beyond me. I mean, when we get a bit further into the story, you'll see why.
Well, I think also because it involves his two young daughters, the police search, they ramped it up a bit faster probably than normal.
And the fact that Shanann was pregnant as well.
As suspicion mounted, police asked Chris to take a polygraph test on August the 15th, 2 days after Shanann and the girls disappeared. During the test, Chris's responses were inconsistent and raised more red flags.
Can I just say something about that? I watched the detectives interviewing Chris Watts, and they clearly say to him, one was a man detective and one was a lady detective, and she clearly said to him, if you're lying when you do this, we are going to know. Are you still willing to take the test? And he said yes. So did he think he could beat the polygraph? Or?
Well, that's what I was asking about. Do you think he would actually, like, do you think he thought he could actually get away with this?
I think he just thought he'd have a damn good try. What did he have to lose, really?
Well, and I think we've spoke about this polygraph thing before on other episodes, and everyone talks about it. It's how much credence you're willing to give to a polygraph test, because for all they know, he might fail the polygraph test and still be innocent, because it's happened many, many times, and it's not admissible in court.
Especially if you're under stress and pressure, if your family's just gone missing and you genuinely don't know what's happened and you're the prime suspect.
And by no means am I sticking up for Chris in this situation whatsoever, but I'm just trying to play devil's advocate a little bit. Afterwards, the examiner confronted Chris, telling him that it was clear that he had not been honest. Cornered, Chris asked to speak privately with his father, Ronnie, who had flown in from North Carolina. In a stunning turn of events, Chris broke down and made a partial confession. He admitted that he had killed Shanann, but insisted that it was only after he witnessed her smothering their two daughters. This version of events seemed implausible, especially given the lack of any history of violence on Shanann's part. Detectives continued to press Chris, and eventually, he broke down further, confessing to the full extent of his crimes. He admitted to killing Shanann after an argument, then smothering Bella and Cece himself before disposing of their bodies at Anadarko, where he worked. The full horror of what Chris had done was beginning to unfold. I think initially, he had tried to make it like a self-defense thing, which is just cowardly in my opinion.
How disgusting though that he's actually done that and then he tries to blame it on the mother of his children, who was by all accounts a really good mum.
Well, it's like you said, isn't it? Self-preservation. He's not gonna initially admit that he did the whole thing.
It's just really sad as well that the mum had just been killed and he took those girls out, because that's what he did. He choked Shanann is what he did, and then he wrapped her body in a sheet and the kids came in and were asking what was wrong with mummy, and he loaded them all into the car, and knowing full well what he was going to do. Then poor kids, who were only, how old were they? Three and five,
I think they were.
Were sitting in the car with their mother's dead body, getting driven out to the desert for their own father to strangle them or smother them or whatever with a blanket. And then one watched the other. You know, I mean, I think he killed Cece first, which was the younger child. And Bella had to sit there and watch that.
Yeah, it's horrendous, and I think initially he tried to tell detectives that he'd killed Shanann because she'd killed the kids, and I think that's just epitomises him as a man, doesn't it?
It's just the ultimate betrayal really, isn't it? That not only have you taken someone's life, but you're then blaming another crime on them as well, the crime of killing their own children.
Well, it also shows how far he's willing to go to try and get away with it.
Yeah.
With Chris's confession, police turned their attention to the oil site where he had disposed of the bodies. They located Shanann's body buried in a shallow grave and discovered Bella and Cece's bodies inside separate oil tanks. The chilling details of how he carried out the murders emerged. Chris had strangled Shanann after an argument, then placed her body in his truck. He put Bella and Cece in the back seat, drove them to the oil site, and shockingly smothered them one by one. Bella, the older of the two, reportedly begged him to stop, which has haunted investigators and the public alike. So not only has he smothered both of his young children, but he also, to get them into these oil tanks where they were found, he had to climb up
a ladder first of all, because the two massive big sort of like oil refinery tanks.
Yeah, and then the hole to get them into the tank was it about 8 inches, something
about
like
eight
that?
About 8 inches across. It was like a slot, like a letterbox kind of situation, I think.
So you would have had to stuff those poor girls through those slots to get them into the oil tanker. Now, what kind of human, never mind father or man, but what kind of human would do that to a child?
I've no idea. It's not a human idea.
Or for what, though? For the...
For another woman.
For another woman, for the sake of a new life.
But the thing here as well is, if you want to do that, you know, start a new life, fine, but just get divorced or just leave them. You know, you don't need to do that, do you? So, but let's just go back. I mean, he's got the bodies of his two dead daughters, obviously, I'm guessing one at a time, climbs up this ladder to these oil tankers, basically posts them through a letterbox, because that is what it is. But how on earth do you get a five-year-old and a three-year-old through an eight-inch gap? I've no clue, without breaking something. So that's taken a considerable amount of force. If you imagine a head even going through there. And then these kids were left in this oil tanker in this crude oil, which is going to have, like, obviously some kind of detrimental effect on, you know, any physical thing that's in there. And then the oil tankers had to be drained off, which took time, you know, because they had to, it's like a tap on the bottom that they drain it out of. And these specialist crews had to come in. And those poor people that went in to find the kids' bodies had to wade about in this stuff. And it's black, it's completely black, so the covers, you know, you can't see, you know, it's just a shape.
I was going to say, those policemen, I'm assuming, that went in to get to recover the bodies, they must have PTSD after that.
Definitely, and also, I know it's a bit graphic, but there was, because they'd been left in this oil, there was skin slippage, which meant as they were trying to get the bodies out of the tank, the skin was coming off, you know. And also with Shanann, I mean, it obviously he couldn't do that with Shanann because she was too big, but he buried her in a shallow grave in a sheet. And when the rescue was found, they informed her parents, and her mother said, they said, we've located the body of a female, basically. And she said, and she got beautiful long dark hair, and they said, yeah, and she said, that's my daughter. And that just made me so sad when I heard her say that.
I think from the moment that Shanann stopped posting on social media and didn't turn up for a doctor's appointment, I think everyone that knew her knew that something was really, really wrong.
Well, I think Shanann's friend Nicole phoned Shanann's mother when she couldn't locate her, and she was trying to give her permission to go into the house, but she couldn't. The police wouldn't let her do that, and obviously until Chris got there, because he was the homeowner. But everybody knew there was something wrong.
It says here as well that detectives found text messages from Shanann to her friends indicating that she had sensed something was wrong in their marriage and was fearful of losing Chris. So obviously she was, you know, she was already feeling like something was wrong, which we've already spoke about.
I'd seen a Facebook video that Shanann had done, explained about how she and Chris have met, and she described him as the best thing that has ever happened to her.
Yeah, I seen it described. She used to call him her rock.
Yeah, he was the one for her, you know, and just look how that turned out.
On November the 29th, Colorado authorities released surveillance footage captured in the early morning hours of August 13th on the neighbor's security camera, which showed Chris, hours after he killed his wife and daughters, loading a gas can into the bed of his pickup truck and then backing the vehicle into the garage. Police believed that he was transporting the bodies of his family to the remote oil work site where they were later discovered. So this is what you were saying earlier about him looking a bit uneasy and a bit nervous when they were interviewing his neighbour about the CCTV footage, because obviously he knew they were going to see something.
Yeah, because his neighbour had said that he doesn't normally park the car where it was parked. He normally parked it on the street, I think, but on this occasion he backed it up to the garage doors, because in them kind of houses, you know, there's an internal door where you can come down, you know, from upstairs through the house into the garage, and then, you know, from there he could have loaded the body straight into there. I think one of the saddest things about this whole thing for me is there was another video of Bella, and she was singing a song in the back of a car as they were driving along, and it was My Daddy Is My Hero, and I think that's probably the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think I was just going to say, the thing that I find horrendous and just so sad and upsetting is the fact that he didn't even kill the daughters in the home. He made them sit in the back of that car while he drove them there. And obviously they're not going to know what's going on. They're far too young.
Well, the thing is, they trusted the father, didn't they?
Well, and also it's like, you can relate to it when you've got kids, can't you? My son's two, and I just know if I put him in the back of the car, he just thinks we're going somewhere.
Of course, total trust, that's what I mean. And I saw another video where Shanann was describing the kids, and she was talking about Bella, and she said she's just getting to an age where she's thinking about what she wants to do in life. You know, she was 5 years of age, and her ultimate ambition was to be Elsa from Frozen. Isn't that just... There's no word, really, is there?
No. This CCTV was shortly after Shanann was seen returning home from a business trip and proved that she had never left the home with their daughters the day that they disappeared, as Chris had tried to claim to police.
That video where she comes up to the door is captured on the Ring doorbell CCTV. You see her friend drop her off, which was Nicole, and she walks up to the door, and you just see her put the key in the door, and you just know that's the last time. You almost want to reach in and stop her, you know?
But then also, I know I say this in every episode, but is he that stupid that he doesn't even know he's got a Ring doorbell?
From what I've read, it wasn't even a spur of the moment thing. He'd actually thought about it many times.
But that's what I'm saying. So if he's going to tell the police, oh, Shanann's gone out with the girls, I think in one interview he said she took them on a play date, and in another interview he said she took them to a friend's house after they'd had this emotional conversation. But does he not realise that they've got a Ring doorbell? So it's clearly not going to show them leaving.
Obviously, he didn't think about any of these things.
I mean, this is not that. This is only 6 years ago. I mean, it feels like it happened a hell of a lot longer ago, but it was actually only in 2018. You know that people have got CCTV. You know that people have got security cameras in your neighbourhood. You know that people have Ring doorbells. It baffles me that people don't think of these things. Or do you think he was thinking?
Well, I don't think he was thinking, because afterwards he tried to cover it up. So he wasn't planning on trying to get caught, or just didn't care, but I really don't know. I mean, he said he'd thought about it many times before, and he kind of had sort of an outline plan in his mind, but maybe not fully. And that night, it just, whatever happened when Shanann came home, and I'm guessing after the business trip where he wasn't responding to her, I mean, he did respond to her text, but not in sort of like the way she wanted, and she must have been in a really bad state, you know, because she was pregnant as well, and, you know, a bit up and down and stuff, and then he was being really funny with her, and then obviously some kind of argument started. And what he actually said in his confession was, when he did confess, was that he got on top of her and strangled her, and her eyes filled up with blood. And then what he said was, she relieved herself, and that's how he knew she was dead, because obviously you lose all bodily functions, don't you, when you die, and he knew she was dead. And the kids came in and were asking what was wrong with mummy. And
but I don't know why he needed to kill the kids. Do you think it was just utterly get rid of everything of his previous life and move forward?
Well, the kids had seen him with Shanann's body, so, and they didn't really understand what was going on, but maybe, you know, he thought they were actual witnesses. And also, if he's killed the mother, why not just kill everybody so he has got a clean slate?
I think he intended on killing all of them. I don't think he ever was going to let any of them live, to be honest.
How on earth can you put your two kids in the back of a car? Because it's wrong whichever way you look at it with, the, you know, killing Shanann. I don't mean that, but that is one issue, isn't it? But the other one, the two kids who are just sitting in the car, knowing what you're going to do, that you're going to drive them out there and do that. And, you know, Bella said she saw him smother Cece and said, are you going to do that to me now?
The community was left reeling as Chris's actions came to light. On November the 6th, 2018, Chris pleaded guilty to multiple counts of first-degree murder to avoid the death penalty. Of course he did, because he's a coward.
What must his life be like in prison, though? I believe he's turned to Christianity now, as most of them do. And maybe that's true, you know, maybe he's realised what he's done, I don't know, but he mustn't have a very nice life in prison, surely.
No, I read somewhere actually about it that he... he's in solitary confinement. He gets out of his cell for 1 hour a day just for exercise and to eat. And apparently they have to keep him separate from all of the other inmates because...
I bet they do.
Because he's deemed as a child killer. Apparently that's like the lowest of the low when you're in... Well, it's the lowest of the low, full stop, isn't it? But in prison especially, even other criminals. It's said online that he's not even... That he's still unpopular even among criminals. Yeah. Like, other criminals look down on him as well.
He's like the bottom of the food chain, isn't he?
He's the bottom of the barrel.
You've got the murderers and even the child killers, just the way he did it. He's probably bottom of the child killers as well.
100%. So they have to keep him separate because they know if they mix him with other criminals, the likelihood is they're probably going to kill him.
They'd probably be doing us all a favour, to be honest. But if he's, like, in his cell of a night time and he's on his own for that length of time, how can them images not replay in your head and do something to you, though?
I'm sure they do. But like you said, apparently he's turned to Christianity now, so he's made peace with what he's done and asked for forgiveness and whatever. It's all a load of bullshit, if you ask me.
Well, it's him that's got to carry it on his conscience, and, you know, he's going to be judged one day, isn't he?
During the sentencing, the judge stated that this was one of the most inhumane crimes he'd ever seen, highlighting the devastating impact on Shanann's family and friends. I think that's the perfect word to describe it, is inhumane.
Is, yeah, and I saw the, you know, when they passed the sentence down, Chris's family were there and Shanann's family were there, obviously, and it was just awful to watch. But I actually felt sorry for Chris's family as well, and there's a bit of a thing online where people are against Chris's family, you know, maybe they were trying to make excuses for it. I don't think they could understand why he did it themselves, you know, and you've got to
It seemed realize, like it was a shock to even his own family.
Yeah, but I think people think that they were making excuses for him. But when he confessed to his father, I felt sorry for his dad. I really did. And, you know, it's had a big impact on them as well, hasn't it? You know, they didn't do the crime, did they? And by all accounts, he was brought up quite well. And as you say, he was quiet and reserved. So they're probably wondering what, you know. But I think it's human nature to put the blame on someone else. And they're probably blaming Shanann.
It's guilty by association, isn't it, for his family?
Yes.
They're going to be frowned upon because just for being his family, even though they had absolutely nothing to do with it, you know, then you'll start calling into question, was it the way he's brought up, all that kind of stuff. So I don't think they can really get away from that.
But his family, I mean, especially his mother and father, you know, he is still their son, isn't he, you know, no matter what he's done.
Chris was sentenced to 5 life terms without the possibility of parole. As he was led out of the courtroom, the public was left grappling with one question: how could a man who appeared so ordinary, so loving, commit such an unfathomable crime? Many people wanted to know why Chris did it. Some experts suggested he might have displayed narcissistic traits, possibly motivated by the fantasy of a new life with Nicole Kessinger. Others speculated that the financial strain and responsibility of a growing family left him feeling trapped. But in truth, Chris's motives remain unclear, even after extensive psychological evaluation.
I think it's be there. I think the pressures of, they were trying to maintain this lifestyle. I mean, they were going bankrupt and Shanann was adding to the family. Now, I think that was with his consent. I think he knew about it, but I think he just went along with it, really. I don't think it's what he wanted.
I think it's a mixture of all of those things, to be really honest. I think he was probably feeling trapped because of the financial stuff, and then he sparked up a relationship with this woman at work, and I think he probably thought, well, I actually want that, so to get out of this situation I'm in, I'm going to do this. Yeah, which in turn is going to enable me to lead this new life.
Yeah, but it's really extreme, isn't it? As I say, he could have just left, couldn't he? So,
yeah, that's what I can't understand.
I mean, if you did a poll and there was 100 people and they were unhappy in a marriage, you know, they've got the opportunity to walk away, haven't they?
Yeah, I wonder why he came to the conclusion that that was his only option.
That's what I'm saying. You know, 99 out of 100 people would say, wouldn't they, well, I'll just leave or I'll get a divorce. What? Why was that the solution for him? I just don't understand that.
I guess that's the golden question in this case, isn't it?
I wonder if he sits there, though, and replays his life and thinks,
could he have done it differently?
Yeah, if he could go back, would he change that? Obviously, I think he would, you know, just for selfish reasons even, but what a horrible thing to happen. The house afterwards, by the way, was they couldn't sell it for a while because basically nobody wants to live in it. And also, I think it's that kind of tourist attraction kind of situation, isn't it, where people are driving by, taking photos and getting photographs taken in front of the house and things.
I think also a big point in this case, which we've spoke about the affair with Nicole Kessinger, but what I've only just realised is he actually only started a relationship with her in June 2018. He killed his family in August 2018. That's only 2 months. So it must have been some relationship for him to think that that was the option, to kill his family, to be with this Nicole, if that was the reason. But 2 months to be with someone, to come to that conclusion, that doesn't seem right.
It's like a catalyst, really, wasn't it? That set a chain of events into action.
Well, how well can you get to know someone in the space of 8 weeks?
That's just 8 weeks, isn't it? That's more like infatuation, isn't it?
I think that's what it sounds like, yeah. And I'm not saying that I think that was the only reason. I think the financial stuff definitely played the part, but this affair had to have something to do with it.
That affair was like an escape, wasn't it, really? An escape route. Although, you know, there is a question that, you know, some people believe that Nicole had something to do with this. Personally, I don't believe that. I do think she knew more about the situation. You know, he was saying he was getting a divorce and that hadn't actually happened at that point. You know, that discussion hadn't taken place, but as far as we know. But I think she probably could see that he was still in a relationship, especially with Shanann being pregnant and everything. So some people have come to the conclusion that Nicole was far more involved with the planning of this and everything, but I don't think so. I don't even think it was actually planned properly, so...
No, I think she's just really unfortunate and an unwilling participant in this story. I think she just sparked up a relationship with this guy at work. Obviously, she knows that he had some baggage in terms of a family and a wife. And like I said, he's a...
I think she chose to ignore that. You know, she was looking up online wedding dresses and things, like I mentioned earlier on. So she was obviously looking to have some kind of future with him.
Well, you just think, look at the lies that he's told to try and cover up his crime. So imagine the lies that he's probably telling to her. The tragic murders of Shanann, Bella, Cece and unborn baby Nico serve as a reminder of the danger that can lie behind closed doors. On the surface, the Watts family appeared to have it all. Yet beneath that facade was a darkness that led to a devastating end. Today, their loved ones continue to mourn, and the community remains haunted by the tragic events of August 2018.
That's probably one of the most horrific cases I've ever heard.
Yeah, I think it's just really sad, isn't it, as well? I think anything involving kids is always horrible, but I think you can relate to it more when you've got your own as well.
Yeah, when kids are in the equation, you know, they don't get any say in it, do they? So,
and that's not taken away how horrific it is what he did to his wife, but yeah, kids for me just has a spot now that I've got my own.
Yeah, the relationship with his wife is completely separate from his relationship with his kids, isn't it? So why drag them into it? Why did they need to suffer because they've made bad decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good news, if there is any good news in this case, is that he'll never he'll never be released and he will die in prison.
Yeah, but I think the thing for me is the way he treated the kids, that they were just disposable, almost like garbage, you know. They were just so easy to dispose of. And even the way he did it in those tankers, it was just like posting a piece of rubbish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Like, cut off any feeling from them, and that's a scary thing, isn't it?
I think, you know, he, like you said, he'll have to deal with that for the rest of his life now, stuck behind bars on his own in that cell. And I hope it does haunt him, to be honest.
The trouble is, it's not just him that's dealing with it, is it? It's all Shanann's family and his own family. It's like ripples in a pond, isn't it? So that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.